Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. This show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest in the studio. Stop. You're laughing over your own intro.
Sorry.
So this is a man. Anytime I can get him in studio, it is an event. And I love having him on the show. There are Academy Award-winning directors and actors easier to get on this man than this man. So the fact that he's here, the co-host of Indie Style, the tall one, the non-pregnant one, Mondays through Fridays at 10 o'clock on Wish 8, Tracy Forner's in studio.
Hey,
how are you?
Well, you having me on Film Sociology would be like having inviting a vegan to your barbecue. I mean,
I love film.
I don't really see them as they happen in theaters.
But you also get to do the fun 5-minute interviews over the satellite with people.
Yeah,
it's
amazing. I'm still sometimes very much a fanboy during those interviews. It's very Chris Farley-esque at times.
A little bit.
You know, when I get to ask Jeff Bridges a question about his hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like really good hair, too.
I don't delve too deeply there.
That's all right. So, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. But ladies and gentlemen, I think today we're going down a rabbit hole of pop culture nonsense.
Sure.
That you can never hear on Indie Style. And, well, you can only hear it here at Film Sociology. So, but I want to get to the new movies out of the way, because I got to do Indie Style, and I guess you can go on to indiestyle.org to see the segment.
.tv.
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 Oh,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, you and your nonprofit state of mind. I understand that.
Right.
I'm on the other end of the spectrum. Yes, that's available for viewing at any time.
If you really want to see that and see my fantastic wardrobe, because I was filling in for the IFJA's best dress critic. That's Chris Lloyd, of course. And I think last year I wore my Charlestown Chiefs jersey, and I thought, you know what? You know who's not represented on Indie Style? Long-haired, film-loving Detroit Tiger fans.
There you go.
So
exactly.
My history of television, I've always gone after the niche market, and management hates that. So anyway, all right, opening in theaters this weekend, kind of a slow weekend because I guess nobody wanted to go up against Solo, even though Solo's is a film called Adrift, and it stars and is produced by Shailene Woodley, for you fans of Fault in Our Stars and dystopian nonsense. She's in this film with Sam Claflin, for you fans of Me Before You, the film where he played everybody's favorite hunky quadriplegic. And they fall in love in Tahiti. They're going to take a boat from Tahiti to California. And they get caught in a crossfire hurricane. Yes, I quoted Jumping Jack Flash on morning television.
Thank you for dating your pop culture references so that I will get them.
Yes. And so the film is kind of spliced into two sections. One, it is the aftermath of the hurricane. He's got a broken leg. She is trying to help, you know, maintain and survive. And then the other half is when they first meet and fall in love. So Shailene Woodley, like I said, she produced this. It's a lot of physical work for her, a lot of diving and climbing and that sort of thing. And as I said, both actors also have a lot of heavy lifting of clunky dialogue. And
well, love is awkward.
Love means, yeah. And I compared it to Love Story meets the Robert Redford film All Is Lost. So love means never having to say the ship is sinking. So, but it looks great. I mean, it's a lot of gorgeous footage of Tahiti, as well as underwater footage and out in the ocean, and you know, two good-looking people trying to survive. It didn't quite do it for me. The ending has a little twist to it that if you've read Nicholas Sparks novels, you could probably see it coming. Mm. So it didn't quite work for me. Although, like I said, it technically is cool. But the two teenage girls behind me, about four rows back, these are the ones every 5 minutes I can hear. Aww.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's who they're.
That's who they're gunning it towards.
On the other end of the spectrum, I love sailing movies. I don't know if it's where I was
Master
raised.
Master and Commander,
any of that
White
stuff.
Squall.
White Squall. What was the one with Matthew Modine and
Wind?
Wind. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's because I always wanted to sail, and I grew up near water, but I never had the time. I never took the time. So it's sort of a mild envious thing. So
you guys, you might be renting this.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Could do that.
So
can I like splice out the romantic parts and just the sailing?
No, they're good looking and fun. I guess. You know. But. So anyway, but yeah, and then same two girls as I'm leaving the theater, they're taking selfies with the poster. They're that kind. So anyway, that is out there. You'll probably like it more than I do. However, we have another film about young people in love with a nonlinear storyline, and it's called On Chesil Beach, and it stars Saoirse Ronan, for you fans of Lady Bird, Billy Howell, who was one of the young lads in Dunkirk. Emily Watson's also in the film playing Saoirse Ronan's mother. Guess what? She does not approve. And I think I want Emily Watson to play a mother who does approve. So just once. We'll get to those. But it's set in 1962 in England in a small coastal town, and it is the wedding night of a young couple. Most of the film takes place in the hotel room, and it was fun to hear your eyebrow went up when I mentioned that. But it also splices between her story and his story. He grew up in a farm. She grew up in a wealthy family. She fronts a classical music quartet. He likes Chuck Berry. And so we get the meeting of that meshed in with the awkwardness of young people trying to figure out what their roles are in marriage. And for what it's worth, it also has one of the most uncomfortable marriage consummation scenes in cinema history. I have not made this list. The AV Club has probably not made this list. They actually might, but you know, it's one of those. And so I would say,
well, that makes it pretty genuine then, probably.
Definitely. Not a first date film, folks. Okay. Just that's, and we'll get to bad first date movies a little later on because I've had several. Anyway, but it's really well acted, really underplayed, and its payoff near the end, it works in a melodramatic sort of way. So that is also playing, and I did not see this, but I'm really excited. I'm seeing it actually this weekend. I wasn't able to see it in advance. But First Informed, the new film from Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
That is the title, isn't it?
Reform.
First Reform.
First Reform.
That's why he makes the big bucks. First Reform, it stars Ethan Hawke as a small-town preacher in upstate New York. Things are not well. He's still dealing with his son who was killed in combat. He works at a church in which the megachurch overshadows it. You get a non-comedic role from Cedric the Entertainer playing the megachurch pastor. Amanda Seyfried is in this film. She plays a parishioner who goes to Ethan Hawke for her help because her husband has extreme environmentalist tendencies. One of those guys. Now, Ethan Hawke's been on a pretty good streak lately with films like Boyhood, Sinister. He played Chet Baker in a woefully underseen film called Born to be Blue. He did a film last year with Sally Hawkins called Maudie that I hope more people will go and check out. And so anyway, and he's in a second stage of his life and his career.
Yeah,
so.
I think I pushed back anything that might be Pretty Boy, or he had a sort of an action mode too a little bit, and I think he's just reminding people, hey, I know how to do this.
Yes, and if we can eventually forgive him for dumping Uma Thurman. We'll get to that. But but what I'm really excited for about this film is it is written and directed by Paul Schrader. Now, film goers of a certain age, this is the man that wrote Taxi Driver. This is the man that wrote and directed some of the more underrated films of recent memory, including Hardcore, Blue Collar, American Gigolo, Light Sleeper, Affliction. If you need a film about a guy going into a downward spiral, Paul Schrader is your man. He also wrote The Yakuza for Sidney Pollack and Robert Mitchum. So and word is this is his best film in years, and it's one of Hawke's best performances in recent memory.
Okay, good.
So looking forward to that. Now, shifting over to you, Tracy, because you've seen a couple of things recently. Because I know you are a very, very busy man. before you do, I want to bring this up. I appreciate you being here. Mm-hmm. Your family is well traveled.
Yes.
So, have you ever gone into Indy style on Friday with luggage?
No, I've never.
You can leave it in the car.
I've never done that.
Like. Okay, great. Great meeting. See you guys
yeah,
later.
Exactly. Boom. I did one time. This is I shouldn't even admit this. I did one time because we were starting a summer vacation and needed to leave immediately. I once left the studio before it was over.
No way.
Yes, it was a Friday. I was about to take 2 weeks off, and we had John Waite in studio.
Oh wow!
Okay. So we were wrapping up the show. We had just enough time for the one song, and I was like, hey. Talk to him for a minute, the little interview that I do before, and what are we going to hear? And he's like, all right, John, wait, take it away. And I walked out of the shot and out of the studio and out of the building.
Man.
Now, there's no breaking lifestyle news, so there's very little that can happen in terms of.
There wasn't a harsh tweet at 10:58.
Exactly. Culottes are back in. Where's Forner? We got to get him back on the set for this. You know, it's like, no, it's... White's okay year round. It's like there's nothing like that. So it was a very, very
careful.
Safe.
There's certain voters that would.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true. But so no. My wife travels. She's on the road, 150 plus days a year for work.
Yes, and thank you for letting him come on and play. Oh, because the other part is Tracy's one of those regular guests that I don't even have to ask. I just text him and I go Friday, yeah. and then he'll tell me. Got to be dad in Southern Michigan, whatever.
Yeah, sorry, can't. Yeah, whatever. So we have an understanding.
We have a code.
Yes,
I'm
happy to be here.
Thank you. But you watched a couple things recently.
Yeah, in a theater, which doesn't happen. But I mean, kids movies. All right, every kids movie. My youngest is just turned 11 last Friday, so we still do the family. You know, the family movies. But to like go see something that I wanted to go see myself, mm-hmm. and so yeah, I got to see Deadpool 2 with my daughter.
And your daughter's how old?
She's 19.
Okay.
And then a week prior, we were taking advantage of my boys still being in school while she's being home.
Yes.
And before that, we saw The Quiet Place in a deserted theater, which was the best possible way to see that.
You didn't eat during that one, right?
No, no consent. I'm like, I don't want to hear a crinkle. I swear, if anybody walks in here now, because I'm like, I can't believe no one's. And like, that was the best way to. That's not a movie that I'm going to. You know, a lot of times, if something's dialogue driven or whatever, I'll wait for it to come out so I can watch it. No, that is not something I can watch in my living room and get the effect of what's taking place. So it was incredible.
And dad and daughter are all right?
Yeah. Wait, from which one?
Deadpool 2? Yeah, you also took her to Deadpool. Yeah, I took my daughter to the first Deadpool. We're okay. It's all right.
But she's an adult. She votes, and she's politically active and open-minded about a lot of things in life. And it's nice that we can still share things like that. So I'm like, yeah, if we can share a movie experience, it's just some of the humor in there is like, you know, as a father, you know, I'm repressing my own laughter because I don't want to. I'm like, hey, why do you think that's funny? That's vulgar. In the back of my head, going, it's genius. But
my daughter sees through my filter easily, so that's not really a thing. I took her to the first Deadpool. She wound up seeing the second Deadpool with friends.
Ah, sure.
Because that now happens. Yeah. She's 16.
Are you a fan of the recliners in theaters these days?
I can go either way with them. My fear is we're going to turn into the citizens, the Earthlings in Wall-E.
Wall-E, yes. Thank you very much.
So I don't need them. You know what? The first, actually, this is great. The first time I used recliner seats, there's a certain cinema, it rhymes with Masselton. they had them. Emma and I used them for the first time when we saw Martin Scorsese's Silence. Not a great reclining film.
No, we started out half reclined during The Quiet Place, and within about 20 minutes, we were leaning forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I like it. My youngest son, he's, like I mentioned, he's 11, but when he was, he's physically quite slight, and he had trouble for the longest time. He couldn't keep a theater seat down.
Oh, dear.
There would be like, you'd hear this.
Under the chair.
You'd hear this thud, and you look over, and his legs are up by his head, and there's Legos falling out of his pockets, and it's just like... So in that regard, we kind of like them. But yeah, I agree. Well, we're turning into the citizens of Wally way more than just with.
Yeah, I know that. I'm either way with those. Mm-hmm. Okay, so have you had an awkward cinematic moment with the daughter?
Not in a theater, but I have a TV on most of the time.
Constantly.
But it's like, it's on, and like, all right. Do you want to leave the room, or do you want to have a conversation about what's going to happen here? So
Emma and I got to see Her in the theater. Great mm-hmm. Spike Jonze film, and she was naturally interested in it as opposed to dad dragging daughter to a movie.
Right.
That's in the younger days.
Right.
But there's a scene where Joaquin Phoenix is in bed and he cannot sleep, so he's tapping his earbud to see who else is awake, mm-hmm. and he gets into a conversation with a young lady. And the conversation starts to escalate.
Sure.
And what happens at times when there are moments of intimacy is that dad and daughter will naturally lean in the opposite direction to give the other one more room. Mm. So I'm leaning to the left. Emma's leaning to the right. And they're like, And then finally, as it keeps escalating, the female voice says to Joaquin Phoenix, "Strangle me with a dead cat."
Oh.
And it breaks his concentration. Yeah. And Emma and I laughed so damn hard because it broke the tension we needed.
You needed,
as dad. So
it's fun. My wife can't stand public displays of affection, especially cinematic displays of affection. She hates the noise. Just kissing is it so. My kids are deprived of a lot of romantic scenes in movies because my wife says, "Oh, they're going to kiss, and it's going to sound like a boot stuck in the mud."
Is your wife 8? I'm kidding. Let me shake hands next time you meet her. Got it.
Yes,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
I've also been informed. The funny one was Emma loves the films of Bob Fosse, the mm-hmm. works of Bob Fosse. She will not watch Chicago with me.
Why?
Because she knows I like Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I'm not gonna fan that flame, Dad.
even though I have shown her Cabaret, Sweet Charity, All That Jazz. I've shown her the other Fosse musicals, mm-hmm. So she and Mom will watch that.
Where is she on The Greatest Showman? I was having this discussion this morning in the newsroom with my 11-year-old. It's a movie we can all watch it. But I'm like, he's singing the soundtrack.
We were in Florida. Emma was sick when we saw it in Florida. We were on vacation in Florida. She was not feeling well. She had gotten ill earlier in the day. Mm. So the recliner, she slept.
Sure.
So she was, but it's on the. Yeah, we need to check that out again. Lynn and I both thought it was fine. I always make the comparison. It makes Moulin Rouge look like Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Sure, yeah.
Because I think what The Greatest Showman is for me is a series of music videos spliced together.
Yeah.
While I think Moulin Rouge is actually a complete full musical.
Sure.
So that's...
We've watched it 3 times in the last 10 days.
Wow.
My wife's like, "You're watching it with them." She goes, "By the second time," she's like, "Usually you're not in the room. You know what they're watching." She goes, "You've watched it every time with them." I go, "Knowing you, you should hate everything about this movie." She's like, "You're not fond of, of musicals." She's like, "Zac Efron, you're indifferent about." I said, "He became endearing to me during Baywatch." I said, "She goes, Hugh Jack." I said, "I can't dislike Hugh Jackman in this movie. There's something's compelling, but in a lighter fare."
You haven't done the revisionist history yet on Barnum?
No.
You haven't popped that bubble?
No, I'm not doing that yet.
Fine. Have you interviewed Hugh Jackman? Have you interviewed Hugh Jackman?
I have not.
Okay.
It's Hugh Jackman at my house because of the...
Of course it is.
Because of the Night at the Museum movies.
And I assure you, ladies, it'll not be name-dropping radio. That could easily be done, but nobody wants that.
Exactly.
All right. Moving on a little bit. There are a couple of DVD titles of note at the video store. We're going to be quick on. One is a film that I think confused a lot of folks, although I really liked it. I'm still not 100% on all of it. And it's called Annihilation. This is the military sci-fi film with Natalie Portman,
yes,
Jennifer Jason Leigh. Mm-hmm. It's from the writer and director of Ex Machina, I think one of the better mad scientist films of the last 30 years. She plays a woman whose soldier husband, played by Oscar Isaac, is disappeared into this other realm, and she and a group of female soldiers are supposed to go into the realm and retrieve him and find out the meaning of a lot of things. And on paper, it looks, and especially in trailer, it looks like a female Predator, because you have Jennifer Jason Leigh and Natalie Portman and camouflage and weapons and
badass mode.
And yeah, exactly. And
can I say that?
But you just did.
Okay.
And it turns out to be way more than that. Now, I appreciated the film. It's visually impressive. I'm still not 100% on what the filmmaker was going after based on this popular sci-fi novel, but I liked it nonetheless. So it's a cerebral sci-fi fantasy for those who are into that. The Criterion label has put out, and this is a good one to revisit, probably not with our kids, John Schlesinger's Midnight Cowboy. The only X-rated film to win Best Picture. And this is X-rating by 1969 standards,
sure,
folks.
Sure, exactly. So. I remember watching that. My parents were away.
And it was like of course they were.
It was like a free HBO weekend.
Oh, those.
And I was of an age where I just saw an X-rating. And after you know, years of trying to look through scrambled frames at...
Or when the channel is stuck.
Stuck, yeah.
You put the channel in between the two. There was an episode of Friends. We were doing this long before Friends. Like, don't touch the TV.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm watching it, and I'm waiting for stuff that's never going to happen. But then I revisited when I was older and could appreciate it, and that's just some iconic performances.
Yep. I got to see, they had I think it was the 25th anniversary, and I got to see it on the big screen in Chicago.
Oh,
that was fun. That was very, very cool. Okay, so that's about it. So kind of a slow week for DVD and Blu-ray, but it does give me enough time to bring up the book I returned to you. Because you actually came up with a great idea. So there's a book that Tracy and I mutually love, and I've now read a second time, and I think this is one. I might read it every year.
And it's a quick read, man. I just devoured it the first time I read it.
And we also have a running gag on whose copy is whom's, but but it's a book called Hellraisers: The Life and Inebriated Times of Richard Burton, Richard Harris, Peter O'Toole, and Oliver Reed. And the book is basically their careers and their highlights of debauchery.
World class debauchery.
Yeah.
And still, while they're debauching, they are still maintaining careers on the highest level.
And more than one occasion where we hear that, you know, one of these four is out till 6 o'clock in the morning, and then they arrive on the set at 7, ready to go.
Ready to go, yeah.
As a young guy... And I remember hearing these stories as a high school actor, and we thought, oh, that's glamorous.
That's the life.
Women, be all whatever, and then next...
Not accountable for my actions, and then boom, then applause.
Right, exactly. doesn't work, folks. So imagine your worst drinking day, and it's probably tea time for these guys.
Exactly, just getting warmed up.
But you had a pitch... you had an actually really good casting call on if they made a film.
I would love to see a film of that. I mean, but to catch up, I mean.
Do you remember your three? Because I came up with the fourth.
I believe I had Russell Crowe for
Oliver Reed. Great choice, by the way.
Thank you. I had Bill Murray for Richard Burton.
And I know where that comes from. We'll do the four, and then I'll explain the backstory on them.
I can't remember who I had for Peter O'Toole.
I came up with Peter O'Toole.
Okay.
That was Jude Law.
Yes. That's brilliant.
And then the other piece of inspired casting, Jared Harris.
That's right.
As Richard.
As Richard Harris. That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
So here's the backstory on all four.
I was glad we didn't have to delve into, like, you know, a lot of times when I do casting in my head, I, you know, defy logic and jump, you know, jump through different time loops and things like that to get best case scenarios.
Well, I remember there was a sketch on Saturday Night Live about the Winds of War that Bill Murray played Richard Burton, because Burton did the narration. This was a famous war documentary series from the 1970s. Plus, he also impersonated Burton in Scrooge.
In Scrooge, yes.
So there's that.
Of these are four swag.
Right. Yes. Russell Crowe, there's a film, if you get a chance, it's a silly, fun fight film called The Man with the Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. It's done, I think the RZA directed it. He also stars in it. Lucy Liu's in it. And of all people, Russell Crowe shows up as this kind of gregarious, hard-drinking, bare-knuckle, brawling guy, because it's a fight tournament. So, one, it gives you flashbacks maybe to his role in The Quick and the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm watching this, I'm like, Oliver Reed would have played this 30 years ago. Easily. Yeah. Easily.
Well, and I think Russell Crowe has not a physical menace to Oliver Reed, but they're kind of even in Gladiator.
Yeah,
I mean, and then you're sort of touching back to that, a tip of the hat to Oliver Reed's last role,
and then his last night on Earth.
On
man,
Earth, yeah.
Oliver Reed's last night on Earth, because he died before Gladiator was finished, but went to a bar and had already done his share of consumption, and then some sailors showed up, and he arm wrestled 18-year-olds, and then died.
That is so Oliver Reed.
So Oliver Reed. Jared Harris. Okay, my fun thing on Jared. So Jared Harris for a long time was one of those that guys.
Yes.
And yeah. The evolution of the that guy. You see an actor, you like them, or actress, and you like their work, and then you see them in something else, you go, oh, it's that guy. And then you go on IMDb and you forgot that they were in this, and this.
Right.
And then there's that wonderful moment when you commit their name to memory. So for me, Jared Harris was the obnoxious newspaper editor in Mr. Deeds. The Adam Sandler, which I reviewed on another station a long time ago. He was Winona Ryder's editor, and he's long bright hair and sorry. Well, he had a bit role in Natural Born Killers.
Yep.
He was Andy Warhol in a film called I Shot Andy Warhol, which I completely forgot about. He also played John Lennon in Two of Us.
That's right.
The two man show with him and Aidan Quinn as Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at this. And then he played Lane on Mad Men. And there were moments in that show early on, whether it was a tilt of the head or the way he spoke, and you went, oh my God, there's his dad.
Yeah.
Right there. It was like Peter Fonda in Yule's Gold.
You're
like, yes, oh, geez, there's his father
right
there.
Yeah, you get not just a mannerism, but something about the mannerism, you catch a glimpse. Mm-hmm. Of the father, yeah, it's very compelling stuff.
And then I mentioned Jude Law because I remember, I think it was in the aughts, he hosted SNL, and there was a sketch with Seth Meyers as Michael Caine, and Peter O'Toole was played by Jude Law, and it's just them in a hot dog stand at 3 a.m. drunk and not knowing where they were. So,
but you have these actors playing because they bring all their lifetime of baggage. I mean, Russell Crowe is Russell Crowe.
Figuratively.
Russell Crowe has done Oliver Reed type things.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray.
Hopefully not the tattoo. Well,
Bill Murray's done some Richard Burton type shenanigans, that sort of thing. So it's almost like a natural extension that they bring to it.
So, dear studio executives, give us an executive producer credit and a little bit of cash, and let us be on the set. We want to be there for the rap
party. Well, I went to Ireland with my wife once, and we went way out of our way to go to a bar that I knew that Richard Harris frequented.
Really?
And I didn't. My wife, she said, "What are we going to do?" I
said, "Show up."
No, you didn't. But she's like, "What are you?" I said, "I just want to sit here and have a pint where I know Richard Harris had a pint." I go, "This is
cool.
it was cool enough just to be." I mean, He was here once. He probably did something very vile out front.
Dear spouses, let us have these trips on, these little sojourns on vacation. I Richard Harris told a story. This was back when you could go on a talk show and just talk old stories. You didn't have to necessarily promote something.
Exactly.
So, like, for a long time, Peter O'Toole, Michael Caine, Richard Harris would go on something like Letterman. Don't invite Oliver to read back on Letterman. but Harris told a story of he and four other mates from childhood. They would get together every year and they would go pub crawling. And this was the first year that somebody in the group died. And they went to this guy's funeral. And for an Irish wake, he's on the table in the kitchen.
Sure.
And the four other surviving members thought, well, we're not going to let death get in the way of tradition. So they took the body with them. going from place, and I can't remember if it was the second, third, fifth place, but the as the night went on, they're at a pub, and the pub gets raided. And here comes the police with the billy clubs poking people moving along, and then they poke the guy who's asleep on the table. No, he's not moving.
And that was the treatment for Weekend at Bernie's.
I would love to see a Shakespearean version of Weekend at Bernie's with Richard Harris and those guys.
These guys could not exist today. They could not. They, their career would be
24-hour news. And,
social media and TMZ. It just wouldn't happen.
Or they would just be crushing a lot of phones with their bare hands.
that's true. the lawyer's just right behind
right,
him.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Write him a check.
So, yes, Tracy Forner from Indie Style is hanging out with me here at Film Sociology. Mark your calendars, folks. We have some other stuff coming up. This all depends on when you're listening to this show. But if you're listening on Saturday, thank you, at the Art Craft Theater tonight at 7:30 p.m., My Neighbor Totoro, for you fans of Japanese animation and Miyazaki.
Pondering going to that with my daughter.
Cool.
Yeah.
Emma loves – we have a Miyazaki box set we still need to get through. Hopefully get it through her by the time she's done with high school. June 5th, Tuesday, June 5th at 10 a.m., you'll be working, the summer break film series Chicken Run. Fun
move,
and
man.
And you show this to your kids, and then in a few years you show them The Great Escape and Stalag 17.
Exactly. I've had – this is one of some of my most fun debates on Twitter. I have some that aren't so fun. is the greatest is movie list, other people's movie list.
Yes.
And mine is constantly so The Great Escape is the highest movie on my greatest movie list that doesn't have a horse.
Oh. That's true.
I tend towards Westerns. I mean, I was waiting for somebody to say there's one in the background in the pasture scene. Yeah,
oh,
fine, whatever.
Shut up.
But no, that is I mean, that ensemble is incredible.
Exactly. June 8th and 9th at 2 and 7:30 PM, Airplane.
Sure.
Absolutely. I have not shown that to the child yet. I got to work on that. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, what was the last drive-in experience you had? And have you had one with the family?
Yes. Last drive-in experience was Monsters, Inc. and Dodgeball. It was a double because the kids fell asleep.
That's the plan.
The kids fell asleep, and then you quickly rode over. This was back when Claremont had a drive-in, which was fantastic.
Wow. I still need to have one with family. I always tell the story of back in the day because we were of an age that you didn't necessarily have to have a brand new film for the second feature.
Right.
And I remember it was because Arthur had come out, so Dudley Moore was a huge star then. But it was Arthur and then 10, which was 2 years old.
Yeah.
So
but
that
that's a nice double feature. Yeah. I distinctly remember going with my family when I was little. My mom would bring a blanket and a pillow, and she put me to sleep in the back window of the Buick.
Nice.
Back when Buicks were that big.
Yeah.
That's
weren't that tall then.
No, I wasn't that tall. I'm a man called horse. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
it all goes back to Richard Harris.
Yeah.
I remember the first one I remember was Towering Inferno and Young Frankenstein.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's my daughter's favorite film, Young Frankenstein.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. We toss quotes back and forth
as
a lot.
Do we. Okay, over at the Tibbs on Screen 1, Upgrade. Oh, yeah, that also opened this weekend. And Screen 2, Breaking In. This is with Gabrielle Union, not Burt Reynolds. I'm old enough. There are other film titles with share the same name. Screen 2, Solo and the Avengers.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Screen 3, Deadpool 2, Life of the Party. This is the Melissa McCarthy film where she falls down. Right. Screen 4, Adrift and Overboard. Did anybody see the remake of Overboard?
Why did they need
familiar title?
I
think it's a familiar title.
I always envision I have this imaginary boardroom in my head, and based on what I'm annoyed about, whoever's sitting around the table going, how did this get a green light?
Familiar name, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that memorable remake of Point Break and Fright Night.
All right. I have movies to make lunches and fold laundry by. Okay, they're movies that I'm familiar enough with. I don't want to watch anything too compelling because the lunches won't get made.
He doesn't watch Seventh Seal. He's not doing Bergman and Fellini.
Yeah, exactly. And I get annoyed when I'm looking for the kids are asleep. I'm looking for a movie, and then it's and it's Point Break. Because lately, as of late, it's been the wrong Point Break.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And it's like, no, you need to, there needs to be an asterisk next to it or something.
Thank you, Barry Bonds.
My wife's like, why don't you just run the film in your head? You've seen it so much. I'm like, I probably could do that.
My issue, of course, is I have a wonderfully fantastic and probably sad movie library downstairs, and my wife will watch the televised version of a film, and I'm like, honey, it's downstairs. I don't want to go downstairs.
But it's commercial free.
Yeah, it's commercial free, and it's on it. She's just on her laptop. So, okay. Over at the Skyline in Shelbyville, you have Solo and Deadpool 2.
There you go.
Sure. And the midnight movies at Keystone Arts. Now, have you done a midnight movie with the daughter yet?
I have not.
Okay. Well, here's some options, maybe.
All right.
Next weekend, June 8th and 9th, Big Trouble in Little China. I don't know if she's going to go to that one.
No, but Kurt Russell is—he's one A with Jeff Bridges in the best
great hair department.
Yeah, exactly.
June 15th and 16th, Suspiria, the uncut version. June 22nd and 23rd, Spirited Away. See that might be
okay.
The one.
Yeah.
I think so. You know what? Maybe I'll talk to my daughter. Foursome. Dad-daughter quartet.
Quartet, there you go.
Oh, God, you got dragged to this, too.
Oh, my, yeah.
June 29th and 30th, The Room. Of course, Tommy Wiseau's masterpiece.
Sure.
July 6th and 7th, Mr. Hoopa.
Yes. I can get a go to that.
July 13th and 14th, Mean Girls. July 20th and 21st, Stop Making Sense. And July 27th and 28th, Akira. So all of
nice.
Those.
Is anybody doing Rocky Horror anymore?
The Irving does it once a month.
Okay. Oh, good.
So just go to the Irving Theater in Irvington, and I can't remember. I think it's the first Saturday. Go to the Irving website and double check.
Explain that to a millennial or your younger. What a cultural sensation that was.
The midnight movie.
Yeah.
Well, if they're theater kids, they do know.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, that you get to yell and you get to throw things and it's allowed. Yes, it is. We're not all Mystery Science Theater people or Riff Tracks. They're professionals.
Right. I remember going to a Rocky Horror Picture Show midnight showing once, and I called my friend the next day. I'm like, man, I'm tired. He's like, I woke up with toast in my pant cuff. And I was like, then it was a success.
My hair was not as gray, but just as long. And I remember going to it. There was a period in 1987, 1988. I was going to it almost every weekend.
Oh, wow.
There was. And I saw, but this particular one, I was in Long Beach Island, New Jersey, where I saw Jaws for the first time, by the way.
Oh.
But for a week after the movie, I pulled rice out of my hair. But there was a mall theater in Utica, Michigan.
Okay.
And if the time was right, if I went to a concert in Detroit or Auburn Hills, or I went to a ball game and I was through Utica and it was about 11:30, 11:45.
Why not?
You know, I'm going to go over.
I
got nothing to do the next day.
There you go. That's great.
So, yeah. So, anyway, that is happening at the Midnight Movies over there. Now, speaking of Big Trouble in Little China was directed by John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
We have a quick edition of Dead People We Like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And you would have thought he died just for the purpose of this show, because we're very esoteric in our pop culture.
Yes.
An actor named Frank Doubleday passed away. And going through his stuff, he has about 30 or so credits, a lot of TV and movies. He was in the first Nudie musical. I own it. It's a nudie musical with Cindy Williams from 1975. It was a 20th Century Fox attempt to make a grown-up or an adult musical.
Okay.
But he was in that. He was in films like The Big Fix, Avenging Angel. God, I remember that. Yeah, Nomads, Space Rage. He was a mercenary in Broadcast News, the aptly 1989 film L.A. Bounty, Shakespeare's Plan 12 from Outer Space. But he's known for two things, but especially with this one. Here he is as Frank Doubleday in John Carpenter's Escape from New York. Here's the scene he did. He's a spiky-haired guy. Here's the scene with Lee Van Cleef.
They touch me, he dies. If you're not in the air in 30 seconds, he dies. If you come back in, he dies. Twenty seconds.
I'm ready to talk.
19. 18.
What do you want?
17. 16.
Let's go. Let's go.
That's that guy.
That guy.
And if you, and you know, Escape from New York was one of those. It was on cable constantly in the early to mid 80s.
I love that movie. Snake Plissken is just
President of what? The finest Clint Eastwood impression captured on film by Kurt Russell.
Exactly.
But the other thing he is in, I forgot about this. He was also the white warlord in John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13. Now, if you've not seen Assault on the original, don't worry about the remake nonsense with Ethan Hawke. But this was kind of John Carpenter's version of Rio Bravo, because it's set in an abandoned jail. The police department have moved into their new facility, but they still had to bring a couple prisoners in, and they had some stragglers, and a roving gang of really bad hombres have taken over a section of town, and they wind up surrounding the abandoned jail. There is a scene early on in this film, and at times it's freakier than Halloween, because we had a better chance of seeing bad hombres in the streets of Michigan than say, maybe Michael Myers. But there's a scene where this character, played by Frank Doubleday, shoots the guy who runs the ice cream truck. And then a little girl, played by 70s staple Kim Richards, orders an ice cream cone. She orders a vanilla twist. So the guy makes the ice cream, hands it to her. She goes away. You know, is about halfway down the block and realizes is it's plain vanilla, not vanilla twist. She goes back, and guy shoots her.
Oh my!
So now, ladies and gentlemen, we know that Children in Peril is kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people when it comes to films, especially parents, especially moms.
Oh yeah.
But this, I think, it was my first time in a grown-up movie. When you saw that, and this is early on in the film, like, oh, this film's not screwing around
at all. That was its warning shot to let you
pretty
know.
Pretty much. Yeah, we're going down that path.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, anyway, thanks, Frank. Appreciate your work.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of 70s stuff, you had, and this is, once again, Tracy Forner from Indie Style is here, but you have a campaign that I know you want to begin. So we've talked
one?
About this. The Don Johnson Oscar nomination train.
Well, I think the Bill Murray Oscar train has left the station. There was a window
there. You don't
think
he's going to get another one after? He doesn't care.
I believe he doesn't care. I just think, actually, Django Unchained was on last night.
Oh wait, we're gonna get to that segment in a little bit.
It was. I just think he's
great as Big Daddy.
I think he's underappreciated as an actor. He was the ultimate '80s pretty boy, bad boy, and I think he got saddled with that. I think that hurt him. But I thought he was gonna get the John Travolta treatment.
That's not what I said.
I see where you're going, because he's great in Django, but the problem is he was only got like two scenes, and it wasn't quite big enough. Of course, Quentin Tarantino helped revive John Travolta's career. He elevated Samuel L. Jackson. He got an Oscar nomination for Robert Forrester. Pam Grier still should have had one, and still should have won that year. Mm. And he's done this with others. You know, Michael Parks, the great. Great gentleman from Wanted Dead or Alive, among other things. So, yeah, he has a knack of bringing in people he likes. Of course, Stuntman Mike in Death Proof. And Kurt Russell got to have that ridiculous beard in two films, The Hateful Eight and Bone Tomahawk. So he has a way of kind of reminding people, hey, these guys are – and Don Johnson got that a little bit in Django Unchained. But I think he needs a bigger role to possibly get a nomination is I'm thinking supporting actor. Oh. I'm thinking like Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. Because I think he could. It's a movie I've seen way too much. It's because it's on my list of on my list of laundry lunch movies is Tin Cup.
Oh, he's and so he, smarmy he's, and great.
But yeah, he's wonderful. Just the tiniest bit of a mullet, a perfect pro golfer's
great golf
mullet.
Shirts.
Exactly. Just abuses children and
dogs.
Hates dogs. Yeah. There was a lot of nuance to that. And I thought, and I just think, just because he had to have big shoulder pads and stubble for quite a stretch.
I mean, and so career goes on, but yeah, he's done some cool stuff. I was looking back. In fact, I'm going to watch, A Boy and His Dog. I'm probably going to watch that next week because of this conversation. But yeah, I remember it was also interesting to find out what he was working on when he was taking a break from Miami. So like there was the film of Cease Fire where he played a Vietnam vet with post-traumatic stress disorder. Kind of a little bit of a bump. He did Sweetheart's Dance, which was written by Ernest Thompson, the man who did who did On Golden Pond, and that was with Susan Sarandon, Jeff Daniels, and Elizabeth McGovern, if I remember correct. Dead Bang, a John Frankenheimer action film where it's not Sonny Crockett, but he's a cop fighting white supremacists. Right. The Hot Spot with Virginia Madsen and Jennifer Connelly, directed by Dennis Hopper. Fun story. It's a wonderful. I think that was NC-17, and then it got sliced down to an R. But it's an R-rated noir with those two ladies. I got to meet Virginia Madsen live, and she was doing stuff at Entercom.
Oh,
and I went in and I asked her if she would sign. So she signed my DVD of Sideways.
Ah.
She signed my DVD of A Prairie Home Companion, and I saw her stop. When I had The Hot Spot, and I'm sorry, it's a guilty pleasure. And she's like, "Yeah, that was something." She's like,
"Okay,
I
appreciate that sort of honesty."
Yeah, you're like, "Remember when you were in The Hot Spot? And you were in the backseat of the car. That was awesome."
I was getting ready to do a satellite. I'm going to drop a name.
That's
I was getting
right.
ready to do a satellite interview with Donnie Wahlberg about this was a few years ago about Blue Bloods, upcoming Blue Bloods,
right.
Season, and it was a commercial break before, and we were checking the audio. I'm like, "Hey, Mr. Wahlberg, how you doing today?" He's like, "Good. Is this Tracy in it?" I'm like, "Yeah." I said, I just watched Dreamcatcher the other day, and he's like, "Oh, you're the one." So I appreciate when these artists they kind of know.
Okay, so that I bring this back to another thing. So whenever I fill in on Indie Style. Mm-hmm. You're usually pretty good at letting me know who you're talking to, because you remember you bragged me that you were talking to Leah Remini, and well, you wouldn't relay my request, and that's really okay, but
some of your requests are like leaning like you and your daughter leaning in the opposite directions.
Yeah, okay, but I remember when you had on Greg Kinnear.
Yes,
and that's okay. Film Geeks Unite on this one. So, so he's on. I can't remember. The Heaven Is for Real, or one of the quasi religious films that Greg's in, because he brings credibility to it. And I was on, and I speaking of which, Paul Schrader directed Autofocus, which is my favorite Greg Kinnear film. He plays Bob Crane. Mm-hmm. Kinnear captured the charm that Bob Crane had, and Kinnear was able to go into some really dark places that nobody had really let Kinnear do in film.
Right.
So I, of course, flippantly said to Tracy, "Hey, tell Greg I love him in Autofocus. When are they making that into a musical?" And I thought, well, I went to work and it was fine, it was whatever. And then I thought, well, because you didn't even tell me. I went on Indie Style. And I thought, well, I'll see how Greg's doing, because he's got the Indiana connection. And sure enough, you told him that.
Well,
you told him that.
A lot of times with interviews like that, you're given a set of general questions where they would like it to go. The more specific you want me to ask a question of someone, the less chance there is that I'm going to ask that.
Yes.
Because these people, these satellite interviews, they're sitting in front of a camera for hours.
And they're telling you, this is Tracy and Indy. This is so-and-so in Denver.
Exactly. So-and-so. One right after the other. And I don't want the rote answers. I don't want, you can sometimes, and it's through no fault of their own.
No.
They get locked in.
That's
and I'm
their
like,
job.
So I'm going to throw you, I'm going to try really hard to throw you a curveball. I've interviewed Tom Selleck a half a dozen times.
Yeah, you guys are buddies.
And like, he is so wonderful at making it seem like that's the only interview he's doing.
Nice.
But six times I've asked him for Quigley Down Under 2. So to the point where now he kind of knows it's me.
It's coming.
I got Woody Harrelson. I talked to him a couple of months ago, and it was, again, commercial break before. "Hey, Mr. Harrelson, this is Tracy and Indy." "Oh, I remember you." He goes, "You're amusing." I was like, "Can I go home now? That's not going to get any better than
that." See, I've done a few of those, and generally for me, it's and even if it's 5 minutes, the first half you talk about why you're there, and then the second half or the last third,
you try and
get a little wiggle room and get to be kind of silly,
and then I'd like to, if I have time, bring one in from left field.
Heck yeah. By the way, go to AV Club Random Rolls. That's one of the all-time great interview segments of stuff that we wish we could do.
Right.
So,
Yes, it is.
All right. So, but yeah, back to Don Johnson a little bit. I saw him in book. I actually saw Book Club. And, well, it's not as bad as I thought, which is a quote you don't want to see in the ad campaign. Everybody in it works well.
Sure. Okay.
Everybody in it, especially the ladies, have those Nancy Meyer film cinema jobs.
Right.
You know, gorgeous homes and
exactly.
And they all work. So, I mean, and he works well on that. So, but I know he's signed on to do a TV series version of Watchmen.
Oh.
And he's got another film coming, something that's in post production called Dragged Across Concrete, something called Vault, something called Daddy Issues that's a TV film. So,
he's working.
Know.
He's working.
But he's only 68. So he's got at least a good decade before.
Well, I think that was a great example. The whole Burt Reynolds, you moving that Burt Reynolds mode of juicy character parts that, you know.
And speaking of, Burt apparently is going to be in Tarantino's next film. They're going to prop him up. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's Tarantino's version of the Manson murders.
Oh, okay.
So right now, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Leo DiCaprio, Timothy Olyphant, Kurt Russell, Burt Reynolds, Tim Roth, Zoe Bell, Michael Madsen, and Andrea Smith. This is according to IMDb. So apparently it's filming now. So there is that. Okay. this is fun.
Yeah.
I want you to read this because this is a segment. This is another recurring theme that happens with Tracy Foreigner on social media that I adore.
That I get blocked by someone from the indie star?
No, you're not getting blocked. Oh, we'll talk off about it.
Okay.
But I want to introduce a new segment, and I'm having him read this so I can splice it in later and use it. But this is a segment that we're calling.
Oh, damn is on. You need more space in there?
No, actually say. Oh, say the middle section.
Okay. Oh, damn. Title of film is on.
Are your sleeping habits okay? Because it seems like every other day you write, oh, damn, Shawshank is on. Damn, The Great Escape is on. Can't you sleep?
I can sleep. I don't know why. We have premium cable, which makes my wife wants premium cable, which makes no sense because she's gone 150 days a year.
Yes, dear. I will give you premium cable.
Exactly.
But when she's back.
So we got like six HBOs, you know. So there's it's a futile exercise that I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go one more time around the horn like ham. And
then I'm going to bed.
Then I'm going to bed. And I inevitably find something, and it's like. Doesn't matter if I know all the words.
Have a list? Do you have a list of your all-time favorite O-dams?
I actually got to a point where I knocked one off because it had been on so frequently and I had seen it so much. But it's a movie I still love. I just need to cleanse my Gross Point Blank.
Okay,
was on like on a Shawshank level. I mean, Shawshank is on. All the time.
The old joke is, I remember seeing Shawshank in the theater, and even then it had the TNT logo on the corner.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a Big Lebowski. Man, there's any number of them.
So cable? Oh, so it's HBO, so you don't get the...
No.
You don't get the bad Lebowski.
You do not find a stranger in the Alps.
Right.
That's an editing joke.
So bad.
It's almost like a code. You say that to somebody, and based on their reaction, what are you talking about?
Okay, but so this isn't happening at 3 in the morning. This is just folding laundry at home, winding down.
Yeah, boys are, it's a school night. Boys are going to bed. They put themselves to bed quite well when my wife's not there. They had no use for me. So,
are they in bed? Yes, dear, they're in bed.
It's sort of like every night is like the scene in A Christmas Story where he's listening for the feet on the stairs, and then they go, okay, and you hear a door slam. I can hear my son's bedroom is above the kitchen where I tend to watch, so I can hear them actually physically get into bed. And I was like, all right, let's make the lunches, let's fold some laundry. But some are like, oh, I'll watch some of that for a little bit, and some of them are like we call them remote droppers at my house. I'm like, forget it, it's evening's over.
See, we cut the cord a while back, so we don't have this luxury or this dilemma. Flip it through. I mean, it's like, well, it's saved. I can go in back and pick up where I left off, but not quite the same.
But it's one of those things where it's like, well, I would get so much more done if I didn't have this.
Who wants that?
I don't ever see myself being someone that watches on the phone. I can't bring. I see people watching
even on a plane.
Probably not. I mean, or something so dialogue driven. You know. like, or what was, or what was the Tom Hardy in the car?
Oh, Locke.
Locke. You
love
that?
Locke.
That you could. I love Locke.
I love lamps.
I mean, that's something I might get away with because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. require any.
I remember saying there are moments with my Emma that I call pop culture Atticus Finch.
Okay.
And one of the first ones was, Emma, I don't ever want to see you watching a David Lean film on a phone. And she goes, well, first off, Dad, who's that? And second, sure. I'm like, don't sass. Just don't do it. You might want to watch Lawrence of Arabia eventually or Dr. Zhivago's. Don't do it on a phone.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the TV in the screening room. Just look at it. It's not big enough. It's not big enough for David Lean. I'm sorry. Have you inflicted David Lean on the kids?
No, not yet.
I have a friend. Speaking of actually the Ireland trip, he went on a bus trip of Ireland, and they found the beach that Robert Mitchum walked on in Ryan's Daughter.
Whoa!
And apparently, Robert Mitchum's a folk hero in Ireland because he was also very generous on buying several rounds for the house while shooting on location.
I've told you this story before. Also, when we were in Ireland, I made my wife drive us 45 minutes out of our way so I could walk the bridge from The Quiet Man.
Oh, very good. You drag her across 6 acres by the wrist? But she loved that.
Oh, that don't get me started.
And John Ford and John Wayne weren't there to put dog poo on the ground, according to legend or Maureen O'Hara. When Lynn and I were in Paris, I have a thing about Ferris wheels. They are not my best friend.
Okay.
And Lynn loves them. And there was the Millennium Wheel.
Sure.
In Paris, our last night in Paris before we went to London, and we're walking past it, and I finally decided to break. I had Up Where We Belong playing in my head, and I took the. And it's now a thing where I will take her wrist and I will tug it, and mm-hmm. she knows I'm quoting The Quiet Man.
Okay.
And that's our thing. Welcome to Old Husbands Week
in
Film Sociology. Exactly. So I got to get a little bit. We've got a few more minutes left, but thanks to social media, from our buddy Derek Schultz.
Hey, Derek.
Who wrote, next time Matt wears a Tiger jersey on set, you need to wear a Lambeer throwback. Okay, couple things.
I used to have a Mahorn.
Did you really? See, that's. Okay, first off, Tracy has thumbs. So it wouldn't really wear well with the Lambeer throwback, and I love Bill Lambeer because I'm a Pistons guy.
You bet.
But, you know, no, Tracy's evolved. If one guy wears a Detroit outfit on indie radio, it's eccentric. If two guys do it, the management's going to call us in. So,
well, I actually had a former high school classmate in our kitchen on Indie Style this week,
uh-huh.
and she published a cookbook. It's a beautiful cookbook. It's available everywhere. It's called Meals from the Mitten. We're from Michigan,
nice.
I know it's Indie Style, but there's going to be some Michigan talk because we grew up together.
And by the way, there's a certain famous person that wears a Dodgers cap in the city, so you can thank/blame him. If it's good enough for him, it's good enough for us.
That's right.
So there's that. And, okay, I'm with you guys. I believe it or not, I can actually relate to Jake. I call them sprinkles. However, my dad's side of the family is from New Jersey.
Yeah, that's the.
So I understand that. But I call them sprinkles. However, I grew up in Michigan. I live in Indiana. I still call the liquid soda. Pop is the nickname of my father and my grandfather.
Okay, see, you're from the east side of Michigan, right?
Flint, yeah.
Flint, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right. I knew that. But my wife is from Bloomfield Hills. She, too, says soda.
Okay.
I'm from the west side of the state, and everyone I know says pop. So I said, you got east side is soda, west side is pop, but soda pop is Rob Lowe.
Stay gold. Stay gold, man.
Yeah.
Do it for Johnny. All right, we got about 2 minutes left. I guess now we're doing requests. I'm just throwing requests. It's like Tracy Foreigner's greatest hits, because you'd brought this up. Your interview where I don't think I cinched you a job, but it added enhancement to your character.
Oh, it gave me a certain credibility. This was a previous station. I had ventured down for a job interview, and I was in the news director's office, and I looked up, and the morning show at that time, they were discussing the best football movies of all time.
It was Super Bowl weekend, if I remember
and
correctly.
And it was, oh my God, they were throwing out the usual, the program, and Rudy, and stuff like
yeah.
that. And then they cut to you, I just heard a minute or two, and I thought, this guy's gonna, oh, no, he's gonna say North Dallas 40, and he's gonna say, Deliverance.
Not Deliverance.
And he's gonna say North Dallas 40 in the longest yard. And sure enough, you said North Dallas 40 in the longest yard. And the news director looked at me and was like, how'd you know he's going to say that? I said, because they're the two best football movies of all time. I'm like, it's like, don't give me anything with Nick Nolte in it unless he's a wide receiver. Yeah.
Yeah. It helps balance out quarterback Mac Davis. Anyway.
Still more mobile than Peyton Manning.
And Tim Tebow.
Oh, yes. Go
and,
there.
And Johnny, good luck in Canada. So, all right. Yeah. Tracy, I appreciate you coming in.
No, I appreciate your relentlessness in trying to find an available slot for me.
You can check out Indie Style Monday through Fridays at 10 o'clock on Wish TV and in indiestyle.tv.
Yes, sir.
So, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by. Soylent Green is people. Zardoz has spoken. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Good afternoon, Florida.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!